Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the Big East Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
We are back, Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show at eRadio Sports, podcastarena.com, and download our app. We make it so easy. You can take us anywhere 24/7. Sports Map Radio. My producer in studio is John Belmar. He loves Twitter followers, at Third Coast Johnny. We're going to continue the conversation as far as the Super Bowl recap. And I just have to wonder, you know, watching that game, why do you think the Rams, they really couldn't get their running game going? Why is that?
No, they couldn't get their running game going. Their defensive scheme, they came out to win the game. The game plan was right on the money. They had to make Stafford throw the ball. Cam Akers, 13 carries for 21 yards. I mean, that is after he fumbled in the previous game against the Bucks to try to get him in the end zone. It's not been a super great Super Bowl run for Cam Akers. But yeah, they just couldn't get that running game going at all on Sunday.
Okay, well, you have to weigh in on OBJ. So what, he's out with the ACL tear, and I just have to wonder how much this will threaten his contract negotiations going forward.
Yeah, I feel bad for OBJ, especially getting hurt in the Super Bowl. You've seen the tears coming down his face after the game. It meant a lot to him to get to that point, and at least, you know, he's got one. I don't think it's going to affect his next contract too much because he's going to have time to heal. You know, ACL injuries aren't the same as they used to be. You can come back from them. And after the performance he had for the Rams down the stretch, caught the first touchdown in the Super Bowl, he looked really good compared to what he looked like in Cleveland. And I think the Rams should absolutely look at bringing him back. He did well for him.
Okay, speaking of coming back, I mean, what's all this buzz about? Head coach Sean McVay, this dynamic young coach, has such an accomplished resume in really, I mean, John, a short period of time. Do you seriously think he would retire?
Like, no, he's not going to pull a John Madden. He's not going to do that. Look, he was being interviewed and was asked about having a long coaching career. And he basically said, look, he'd love to coach, but he wants to have time with his kids later on. He doesn't want to go, you know, maybe into his late 60s, 70s. And people ran with it. Oh, is Sean McVay going to retire? Is he going to retire? No, he's not going to retire. That story was completely blown out of proportion. Him, Aaron Donald, especially Matt Stafford, these guys are going to be back to running back next year.
Okay, we're going to continue the conversation because coming up next is the director of DraftKings Sportsbook, Johnny Avello. Come on back.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, here we go. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network. And as promised, we are now going to go around the horn and talk some Major League Baseball. Spring training was supposed to start this week, and we want to get the latest with baseball's lockout. We are so delighted to have joining us for the very first time from the Washington Post. He is the Nationals beat reporter, and that is Jesse Doherty. Good morning on this Saturday, Jesse.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, give us your immediate takeaways from Major League Baseball's 80-plus days of the owner's lockout. What is the biggest issue they are trying to address?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weighty question. And, you know, like you said, we're more than 2 months into this, and these sides are still having trouble in some cases scheduling a meeting to sit with each other and bargain. So, you know, the biggest issues, I think the buzzword we see on social media and in stories is core economic issues, and that's revenue sharing, that's, you know, how they address luxury tax, that's sort of all this jargony stuff that while it does matter for the long-term health of the game and for the relationship between players and revenue and owners, I also understand as a reporter, kind of being the sort of intermediary in coverage of this, how it can be frustrating for fans who hear these things and it can seem like really kind of pie-in-the-sky issues that don't really affect them as a consumer. But I would just say hold tight, because once they are hashed out, you know, there is a lull in these things, and about 5 years later until the next CBA. So hopefully, you know, we get through this. It wraps pretty soon, and then, you know, it could just be baseball and business as usual.
You know, listening to the tone and tenor of your voice, Jesse, you sound optimistic they can negotiate a new collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am. I'm not necessarily optimistic on a specific time frame, nor do I kind of have one in my head, because but I am. I mean, I think that, you know, what this comes down to some degree, is competitiveness on both sides. So I think what we're seeing is, while the actual money matters, and I think the players are largely fighting for younger guys who are not represented at the table, because generally the union is comprised of star players who kind of made their money, right? Like, they've generational wealth, and it might not affect them as much as it does next generation. But what we're seeing is two competitive sides, a lot of egos that neither side wants to lose. So, you know, while, you know, it's easy to swipe at the owners, and I definitely have my thoughts on how they've handled things, and I don't think it's been as friendly as it should be, nor as productive. But I do think that what will happen is that competitiveness will get watered down when it comes to actually missing games and having the season shortened, because both these sides have had the last 2 years affected by the coronavirus pandemic. And I don't think they want to stare down another truncated season where they're missing months of the year during labor fights. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. Nationals beat reporter and writer for The Washington Post. Give him a follow on Twitter at @Doherty_Jesse is our very special guest this morning at Sports Map Radio Network. Of course, the lockout is already affecting spring training. We just have to wonder, obviously, you know, how long is this going to continue? Will they start canceling games in April? I think it's important for us to understand this dispute and, you know, what is the ultimate goal, but kind of go from the player's perspective. What have we learned from this current lockout?
You know, what we're learning is, I think that they're trying to unwind a lot of mistakes that were made in the last one. You know, I think in a perfect world, at these bargaining sessions, you sit down when the CBA comes up and you hash out, I don't want to say small things, but more minor details. You maybe fine-tune, you react to what's happening in the market with the sport at large. But the fact that they're just trying to wipe almost the whole slate clean as the players and change very fundamental parts of revenue sharing and how payrolls are structured and how free agency works means that there's some clear regrets, at least of how past players and maybe some of the same ones dealt with this the last time around. Because I think that we don't always see in other leagues this complete overhaul, especially in 2022 when we've had some, you know, labor battles over the years. It's not like this is the first iteration of baseball's union. You know, this has been what's supposed to be a really strong group for a while now. So I think the admission of, wow, we really screwed that last one up is in how much they want to fix now.
Educate our audience, because players going on strike, I mean, there is a difference between a strike and a lockout. What is it?
So a strike would be player initiated, where they're basically going to say, we're not going to come to work. Whereas a lockout right now is basically the owners locking out their employees from the building. If you picture it as an office building, it would be putting chains on the front door and saying, you can't come to work right now until we hash out this bargaining, you're not going to get paid, et cetera. So right now, what we're going through from a work stoppage standpoint is owner-initiated. If the owners were to lift that lockout on, you know, March 30th and say, ball's in your court now, what do you want to do? Do you want to take on the PR burden of saying, were the reason we're canceling games? That could be something they consider, because it could shift the public perception now. I think the owners are right now getting a lot of, you know, it's kind of tomatoes thrown their way, so to speak, whereas if they maybe shift the discussion, and I hope this doesn't happen, but if they shift the discussion and make the players strike, then maybe the public perception and the angst and the anger that fans are feeling actually shifts over to the player side more. So we'll see how they play it. Like I said, this is egos. This is, you know, it's big money. It's a lot of big business. Uh-huh. It's kind of tough. It's tough to parse out.
Okay, so Jesse, I mean, you just have to wonder eventually how this is going to impact spring training games. I mean, the Cactus, the Grapefruit League, was set to begin next week. I mean, what do you think is going to be the side effect from all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think no matter what, we're guaranteed to have fewer spring training games than planned, because even if they, let's say they signed a deal today, you would get to spring training probably in 5 to 7 days. you have to work out, and now you're losing time on your schedule. So I think no matter what, we're going to look at fewer games. I mean, overall, that affects maybe the experience of the fans in these spring training towns. It affects maybe the economies a bit. But from a player standpoint, I think you can accomplish what you need to in team workouts. I don't think missing, you know, 5 to 10 games is going to affect your preparation too much. Maybe on the individual level, it could for some players for various reasons. But that, to me, wouldn't sort of put anybody at risk or in danger of, you know, health problems or not being ready for the season. It's just another shakeup of the routine.
Jesse Doherty, he is the Nationals beat writer for the Washington Post. Give him a follow on Twitter at Doherty_Jesse. And so let's transition. Let's talk about the Nationals. Certainly some of the biggest news this past week is Ryan Zimmerman retires from MLB, a longtime star, and had a decorated career. Why did he feel like right now is the time to step away?
At 37, after 17 years, you know, his contract was up, and I believe that, you know, he does have more baseball in the tank. I think the designated hitter coming to the National League probably would have carved out a pretty good role for him. But, you know, he said in his statement, he just had his fourth child. He wants to be home. He wants to be present at home. You know, he settled in Northern Virginia with his wife and kids, and I think he just kind of felt like it was time. You know, he got a farewell at the end of the year. People kind of saw this coming, and then when push came to shove, it seemed like the best thing for him was to step away and go out on his own terms. You know, I mean, he wasn't, it's not like he won a World Series last year. He won one, two, 3 years ago, but he did, you know, he was playing really well and was still a productive hitter, and it wasn't like watching somebody just be a shell of themselves and taking up a roster spot for the sake of it. I think it's a rare case where instead of the game telling you it's time to hang it up, he told the game, which I think is something that a lot of guys try to do.
Ryan Zimmerman, a 2-time All-Star, helped the franchise win a World Series in 2019. How would you summarize his career? I mean, is he a Hall of Famer? He's Mr. National, right? And you just said 17 years, the face of the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I think, you know, he was the first draft pick in 2005. He was there when they won it all in 2019. And I think for a player to span those two generations of a franchise's history to go from the really bad to the really good to the mountaintop, so to speak, I think that says a lot about that player. It's not like he was just a bench player in those times either. You know, he was the star in 2005, and then he hit the first home run Nationals never hit in the World Series 14 years later, and that just shows his longevity. And you know, his career was certainly affected by injuries in the middle. I think had he not been hurt, he would probably be more Gold Glove winner, maybe even an outside Hall of Fame chance. You know, we're not going to be talking about him in that way now, but I think he's okay and at peace with that. As someone who was able to stay in the same city near where he grew up in Virginia Beach his whole career, I think that's there's certain positives there that kind of go beyond just, you know, what you accomplish on the field.
Okay, Jesse, let's move ahead and specifically zero in on the Nationals. What are some of the biggest questions that they addressed in the offseason?
You know, for the Nationals right now, they hit the reset button at the last trade deadline. They sent away 8 veterans for a bunch of prospects, and their offseason was really about shoring up their minor league staff, setting a better agenda on a player development standpoint. It's not quite like, you know, the exciting stuff of signing major free agents or like adding to rotation or the lineup. But I think this offseason was really more about long-term sustainability and growth and sort of looking ahead. So as far as like building a roster for 2022, that was not quite their focus, at least not yet. They added second baseman Cesar Hernandez. They've added some minor league free agents that maybe could make the outside, you know, fringes of the roster. But for the most part, what they've done is really internal, is adding some roles that were cut when they had to make some statisticians because of the coronavirus pandemic, adding to their scouting staff. So it's really, it's not so cosmetic where it's more so sort of fixing the insides of the car.
You know, when we talk about the Nationals, I mean, when the season does finally get underway, what are your expectations?
I think the expectation is they're going to be a bottom of the league team. I think that's sort of what they've hinted at. That's what their actions in the offseason have said. I think they're going to, you know, I don't know if 100 losses is quite in the cards. It seems like a lot, but I think there's a chance if they face some injuries and some of their better players don't really carry them, that they could get in that range and be looking at a last place finish in a pretty competitive NL East. So, you know, I mean, that's what they bargained for when they traded everyone last trade deadline. And I think the plan now is to, you know, figure out a ways to use a year like this as a springboard to a better year in 2023 and then maybe even a really competitive
year in 2024. But as far as, you know, immediate competing, it's not going to be, it's not what we're going to get in TCU this year.
Good stuff. Great perspective. National beat writer with the Washington Post. Give him a follow on Twitter at @Doherty_Jesse. Jesse Doherty has been our special guest here in Hour 2 at Sports Map Radio Network. Stay safe. We'll talk to you again real soon. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always love to engage our audience. You can join us live on Twitter at E-Radio Sports. Email the show. info@eradiosports.com. Twice is nice, podcast arena. And did you know you can take us anywhere, anytime? Just download our app 24/7. That is Sports Map Radio Network. Well, the Rams and the Bengals, they squared off last week in Super Bowl 56, and the Rams win their first Super Bowl in 22 years. We are so excited to have back with us, and that is Johnny Avello. He is the director of DraftKings Sportsbook. Hello, Johnny. How are you?
Hey, I'm excellent. Thank you much for asking. Things are going good. Very successful football season, and now we're on to basketball.
Well, we are. We're going to talk some hoops here momentarily, but I just wanted to know, did you recover? Always the Super Bowl. That is a super ambitious week for you.
I did. Actually, it was on a 10-day road trip. Did attend L.A. for part of that. Wild scene down there, and wild scene down at the Phoenix Open too. Both were crazy events the same week. So, and next year that takes place. Everything takes place in Arizona, so it should be another wild weekend in a year from now.
Okay, let's talk about the Rams. Were they clearly the better team in that 3-point thrilling win over the Bengals?
I don't know about that.
Okay,
you know, when if you watch the game, what you noticed is that both quarterbacks were a little on a tentative side. You had Burrow, who was a little inexperienced in big professional games. Of course, he's played in college big games and probably high school big games. And then you had Matthew Stafford, who's been in playoffs are foreign to him. So I thought it was a game that they played close to the vest. I thought it would be that way. The refs kept the flags in the pockets until last quarter. They came out a little bit. The Rams were fortunate to catch a few of those. It was, the point spread was right where it should have been, four, and it could have fell four easy if the Rams would have made that, didn't miss an extra point. So the spread was perfect to where we set it.
You know, talking about the spread, I mean, when we look back on the Super Bowl, what was the most surprising betting trend that you saw across the country?
I knew that the consumers would be betting the first touchdown score. Those markets, they love those. They've been betting all year long. Odell Beckham Jr. Scored the first touchdown at 9-1. There was quite a bit of money on him. Cooper Kupp to score a touchdown in both halves was 6-1, or any time touchdown score, you had a lay minus 190. That's 190 to win 100. So all those touchdown markets were bet quite heavily. And we were expecting that because we put these up each and every game during the regular NFL season and the playoffs. And they were also bet, quite frequently during those times too. So, but I think if you asked for the surprise, I think the surprise was that those numbers were even over expectations, and expectations were high.
Johnny Avello with us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. He is the director of DraftKings Sportsbook. Give him a follow at DK Sportsbook. And you know what? As we look ahead to next season, I mean, who are the favorites to win the Super Bowl next year? And what are the current odds of Joe Burrow and the Bengals lifting the Vince Lombardi Trophy?
There's not a lot difference at the top, and both the two top teams are both AFC teams, the Chiefs and the Bills. You would look for those two teams to have successful years, as they've had a few in a row now, and not a whole lot of personnel has changed. So they're both 7.5-1. The Rams to repeat are 10-1. And then everybody else after that is double digits you know, higher double digits. So right now, you know, with a whole year to go, we opened them up, taking some money, and there'll be some certainly some changes along the way. Tom Brady, is he playing? Isn't he playing? Where is he playing? Aaron Rodgers, Jimmy G, a lot of different. There's a lot of uncertainties out there right now.
Listen, now, Johnny, not to digress, but, I mean, what does the future hold for Aaron Rodgers? There's a lot of buzz.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is he staying? I don't think he's staying in Green Bay. So I think the call is either Denver Broncos, possibly the Pittsburgh Steelers, and another possibility, I guess, could be the Bucks.
Okay, and so how long does Tom Brady stay retired?
Well, we don't even know if he's going to retire because, you know, there's some chatter out there that he wants to go play in San Francisco. So, you know, is there a trade between San Francisco and the Bucks? Jimmy G goes to the Bucks. He goes to the 49ers. I don't know. There's so much out there right now. Not exactly sure. We just have to keep our eyes open and make sure we don't get caught sleeping.
You are listening to The Voice. Johnny Vaillo joined DraftKings in 2018, and his role includes oversight of retail sportsbook trading and risk management. He was the executive director of Wynn Las Vegas Sportsbook for 13 years before joining DraftKings and has been a popular bookmaking personality in Vegas for years. So we're always looking ahead and look in that crystal ball. I mean, is there a team that may not be getting a lot of action at this point, but could be a good value play for the betting public?
Yeah, I think there's always good value out there. I think a couple of teams that maybe could make some noise in the coming year, maybe the Chargers. They look like they're making a few steps forward. Browns had a terrible year. I think they're better than that, what they've showed in this past season. And the Patriots, I kind of like the way they played this year.
Okay.
I like Mac Jones, and, you know, he's with the right organization, right coach. So those three might get a little bit of attention this year.
Okay, now listen, we're here in Houston, Texas, but I'm a big Cowboy fan. So give us a sense of hope. Come on, Johnny, help me out.
You know, I like the Cowboy team. You know, Dak's a good quarterback, Dak Prescott, but you got Elliott is the running back, and I expected more from him in his career. And so, I'll give you hope. It's a good team that can score a lot of points. They're a couple players away. A couple players could be the difference in, you know, going further in the playoffs.
Okay, and our Texans, they've got a brand-new head coach in Lovie Smith. What say you? What are your expectations for 2022 when we talk about the Houston Texans?
Not much.
Come on, John.
I don't expect. Well, no, I mean, you know, you're asking me. We've got them at, you know, 150-1 or so. I just don't expect to see a lot of the team. You know, 5 wins, maybe, possibly 6. I think that would be a successful year.
Okay, we're going to shift gears. Let's hit the hardwood. Let's talk some NBA. And how did the trade between the Nets and the 76ers impact this year's championship future odds?
The Nets are still up there, but I don't know. This trade probably helps both teams. It gives the Sixers a guard that they can rely on that can score. And it gives the Nets a guy, Simmons, who didn't want to be in a 76er uniform. So I think overall the Nets have been struggling a little bit. 76ers are having a pretty good year. But I think you'll see the Nets play much better basketball when they've got all the players on the court, and there's money on the line. And when I say money, I mean, you know, winning the NBA championship. I think you'll see a little bit more out of Irving and Durant.
Okay, Johnny, my final question for you. Show me the money. Who should we be betting on when we talk about NBA MVP? Joel Embiid of the 76ers is the favorite, but Steph Curry and Giannis, they have good value on the odds. I mean, what would you suggest to the public?
They do, and I guess one of the questions will be, will Harden take away from Embiid at all?
Oh, good point.
Yeah, you know, Harden's not going to win it, but, you know, he's certainly going to put up some numbers and take some points away from Embiid. But I think, you know, guys out like Jokic is also a guy that could win this award. Certainly, you know, the Greek Freak could win it. He's always a viable candidate. Steph Curry's sitting at about 8.5 to 1. But you got some others in line there that could also win this, like a Jay Morant or a Booker. Booker's 20 to 1. Maybe that's where some value sits. So, there's some prices out there to be had.
Director of DraftKings Sportsbook, follow online at Twitter at DK Sportsbook, and that is Johnny Avila. We appreciate you dropping by. Take care. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell, and thank you for allowing us to be a part of your weekend. Mark it down. You can join us every Saturday, 10 to 12 Eastern Time. And perhaps you are tuning in for the first time. We always pride ourselves on delivering the biggest and the best in sports and deliver some amazing guests each and every week during our two-hour time slot. And right now, we're ready to tee it up and talk some PGA news and notes. I know the Super Bowl celebration, it's been going on all week in Los Angeles, but right now we're going to focus our attention on the Genesis Invitational that is underway on this Saturday. Several big storylines we will also discuss in our next segment. And you know what? Three straight weeks, we have had three first-time PGA Tour winners. Tom Hoagie, just a week ago. Scottie Scheffler, I should say, a week ago. Tom, 2 weeks ago. And thrilled to have back with us, always one of our favorites, the voice of reason on the Big E Sports Show, and that is former PGA Tour pro, the great Larry Miller. You made it to the top. How are you, L Dog?
Well, that's quite an introduction. I don't know if I can live up to that one. But anyway, hello, everybody. Good to be back with you and talk some golf.
Well, let's tee it up and talk about Scottie Scheffler. How about that final round at the WM Phoenix Open? He was able to close it out and secure his first PGA Tour victory. I know he's a Texas guy, but we're super proud of him.
Well, it's starting to happen every week. I mean, we're getting first-time winners, like, constantly. And, they just keep coming off that Corn Ferry Tour, and within a year, not even a year, they're winning. It's starting to happen all the time. But, it was like a battle of the Bulldogs that final round, because Cantley might be the ultimate grinder in Bulldog. And Scottie Scheffler took him down finally, and it took a while. They kept trading punches. And Scheffler was driving the ball really well, putting himself in position. But they weren't hitting the greatest wedge shots into that, especially in the playoff. It came down to who was going to make a putt. Who's going to make a putt?
Right.
And it looked for all the world like Cantley had the advantage there, and then Scheffler pours in that 25 footer, and the hole shrunk up for Cantley, and he missed it. So, anyway, very deserving first time winner. He's been knocking on the door. Everybody knows, especially the players on tour know how good he is, and it was just a matter of time before he won. So, congrats to him, and going to be many more for him coming up. And Cantley continues to show consistent high-level play. I mean, he's every time he tees it up, it seems he's right there. So anyway, it's a lot of good storylines for this season here with the majors coming up, so it's going to be an interesting year in golf.
You know, when we talk about Scottie Scheffler, I did not realize, Larry, that he had made a putter change going into the tournament last week, and obviously that paid big dividends. That can always be a little bit risky, though. I mean, when you make a major switch like that, right? But it all worked out.
It is risky because you don't have a history or experience
exactly,
putting with that
yeah.
putter. So and the ball comes off differently on every putter. And so when you make a switch like that, it is risky because your distance control sometimes can take a while for you to clock it in. But on the other hand, if you're not making putts, sometimes a putter change, you get a putter that, boy, you say, this really looks good to my eye, and this feels good, and it can boost your confidence, and you putt great with it right away. So it can go either way. And for him, it went the good way, and he putted better and made a lot of putts, plus the winning putt.
You know, we're talking about Scottie Scheffler making a putter change, switching things up at the WM Phoenix Open last week, and ultimately it paid off with the big win. But I want to digress just a moment. If you're making a putter change, how long until you get acclimated to it? Kind of what's the thought process there?
Well, the first thing you have to consider is, how does that putter feel? How does the ball feel coming off the club face? Does it feel soft? Does it feel firm when you hit it? You know, the sound of it, what kind of sound does it make? All those things make a difference to these tour players, and to every player, really. You have to have a putter that you like. Several things about it. Number one, it has to fit you, of course. That's a given. But you have to like the looks of it. You have to like the way the ball feels coming off the face, and the way that it sounds. You get all those things together, and that's a putter that you like, and you're probably going to putt better with it. So you have to consider those things. It's important. So you have to try a bunch of putters if you're considering a change. Try different ones and see which one of those factors, you know, contribute the most to your confidence in it.
So when we talk about Scottie Scheffler, obviously the big win last weekend, what impresses you the most about his game, and what do you think is his potential on the tour? Because, of course, you know, a win like this, Larry, gives him great confidence going forward.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing with him. He's a really good driver of the ball. He's very long.
Yes.
He's not the longest on tour, but he's very, very long. And he's an accurate driver, too. And that's really important, because a lot of these bombers miss a lot of fairways. Take a look at McIlroy. You know, he was leader in driving distance for a couple of 3 years there, but he couldn't find the fairways half the time. And so it's why he hasn't been producing wins like he used to. But Scheffler's an accurate driver as well as long. And, you know, it's with him, with this new putter, if that continues, then he should be right there, just like Cantlay is all the time at the top. He's one of those guys that, I don't know, you've got probably 15 or 20 guys right now on the PGA Tour that you would expect every week for them to be in contention at some point during the tournament. And so I think he has now vaulted himself into one of those top 20 positions for sure. He's definitely in that group. So is Cantlay. But also I think he's got a great attitude about the game.
Yes.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
He goes about his business very even keeled, doesn't seem to get too upset or too excited, and that's how you have to be. And Cantlay, again, he's like that too. So it was a great playoff, a great matchup of two guys who have a lot of the same attributes.
And, of course, you've mentioned Patrick Cantlay several times. He was the runner-up and highlighted his overall performance at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. There is so much to appreciate about his game. I know, Larry, you've shared it before on our program. I mean, he is one of your favorite players. What do you think is his key to consistency, and what are your expectations at the Genesis Invitational at Riviera Country Club this weekend?
It's his golf swing to me. It's Cantlay's golf swing. I think he's got one of the best golf swings on the PGA Tour. And I'm not just talking in terms of aesthetics of the way it looks, but the mechanics of it. If you watch him swing, in fact, you can Google on YouTube, Google some shots of him, some videos of Cantlay's swing, and watch his head. Watch his head during the swing, and it's really a thing of beauty. His head is almost like it's in a vise. It just does not move, and he just rotates around that spine in his head so perfectly. You know, you don't see any lateral movement. It's a beautiful rotary, rotational swing, and that head doesn't move, and it's really a pretty swing. And plus, add to that, he's got a great tempo, too. So it ends up being not only a pleasing swing to look at, pretty golf swing, but it's very, very mechanically sound.
So let's talk about Riviera Country Club. I know that you have played it. It's one of the most revered courses in all the country. I think it's pretty hard to get a tee time. What was your experience like playing there?
I've played Riviera many, many times because a friend of mine did a movie, James Redfield, The Celestine Prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
So I was involved in that. Connie and I were in a couple of scenes in the movie. And so we were out there
nice.
For most
uh-huh.
of the filming of it. And so we played Riviera a lot. And Riviera is, it's kind of sits down in a bowl, and all the way around the golf course, it's ringed by all these fabulous houses. And if you play there, the caddy will point out, just like Pebble Beach, you'll point out who lives here, who lives there, you know, and it's all big-time, you know, A-listers and celebrities and all that. But Riviera is, it's not the hardest golf course on tour, and it's an interesting course. It has a great variety of holes. And when you're watching it on television, watch the number, the 10th hole. It's one of my favorite holes in the world.
Okay.
It's a drivable par three. It's only, I don't know, 320 yards, and all the guys just about can drive it. But if you try to drive that green and you don't get it on the putting surface, you see all kinds of double bogeys, triple bogeys, bogeys on that hole, because it's got a long, narrow green that slants off to one side, bunkers on both sides. It's a very skinny green, very narrow. And if you go for the green and you don't get it on, you're in big trouble. And it's really fun to watch, because here's a par four that everybody that plays golf can reach, but yet the scoring average is always over par in the hole significantly. So it's fun. And Riviera, the par fives are pretty easy for those guys. They can reach all of them, really, in two. It's not a real tight golf course. It's pretty generous off the tee for the most part. It's got a lot of huge, huge pine trees, big, thick, tall pine trees, but they're not real dense, and so you can manufacture shots if you miss the fairway. But I love the golf course, and I'll tell you one interesting thing about the homes around the course.
Okay, they're $30 million.
Yeah. And listen to this. Out of all the
just like Pebble Beach.
And celebrities around there, the first time I played it, the caddy points out the biggest house there, and he says, guess whose house that is?
Right.
And I thought he was going to say Bob Hope or Clint Eastwood or something. Well, guess who it was? It was the guy who started Aquafina Water.
Wow.
He had the biggest house at Riviera. So you can imagine how many bottles a day of Aquafina are sold around the world.
For sure. Hey, he is back with us, joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, former PGA Pro, author. Check out his website, LarryMillerGolf.com. Of course, we are talking about the Genesis Invitational right now at Riviera Country Club. And I just want to reflect back. Tiger Woods had a press conference on Wednesday. He returns to the Invitational as a host, not a player. And I had a chance to watch that press conference. He still says, you know, that he has a long way to go as a player. But it looks like he's trending in the right direction. I mean, what say you? Might we see him at the Masters? Would he play in the par three contest? That's always a lot of fun. That'd give him a lot of confidence, like, hey, he still got it. He can come back.
I could see him in the par three contest. I don't see him playing the Masters. I just don't think he's ready. You know, that father-son thing he played in is one thing. That's a whole different animal. Maybe playing a short, you know, short distance and not having to hit all the shots. And even though he looked good in it and his swing always looks good no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
But even though he looked good in that and hit some good shots, that's a far cry from playing on the PGA Tour in competition. And I just don't think, you know, I would think it'd be more reasonable to think he'd be pointing for the you know, the Open at the old course in St. Andrews, because he loves that place. And I think, if anything, if he's pointing to anything this year, I think he wants to get himself ready for that if he can. But, you know, it's just not a given. It's a terrific injury there. When you're talking about possible amputation, that's a lot of damage. And he's pretty lucky just to have his leg. And I don't know. You know, it's a mystery whether or not he's going to be able to compete at that level again. But you know he's trying, and I would think he'd be pointing to St. Andrews.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Let's continue the conversation with our PGA News and Notes with Larry Miller. Tiger Woods, a 15-time major champion. It is incredible, as you said. I mean, he is fortunate to be alive, and we're obviously so excited and optimistic about his return to play at some point. Well, we have you on the program on this Saturday morning. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was what were your takeaways going back to last week with Charlie Hoffman, his rules rant at the Phoenix Open? He was pretty open and candid on maybe perhaps why some of the players are looking at an alternative tour, specifically being led by Greg Norman and backed by the Saudis' money.
Well, first of all, I think that there are some rules that are not really equitable, not really fair, that need to be tweaked a little bit. such as what he was talking about of having a drop area that's not really appropriate, you know, where you can't drop the ball without it rolling into the water, or, you know, after it comes to rest, if it's that precarious, then it's a bad drop area. So he was right in that regard. Then there are other things too need to be tweaked, like divots in the fairway. You know, that's one of the big unfair rules in golf because it's a man-made thing. It's not something that you caused to happen, and it can really ruin your score, especially if you're in the middle of a divot, you have to go over water or something like that. So that's not really a fair rule. You should be able to take a one club length drop from a divot. But anyway, that's just one of the rules. There's a couple of others that need to be tweaked too. But all that being said, I don't think Charlie Hoffman had to go to that
extreme
extent, you know, to that degree of ranting about it and saying that mm-hmm. that's the reason people want to go play other tours. That's not the reason they want to do that. We all know the reason. It's money. And, I think he was a little bit, I guess he was upset, you know, and said some things he probably wished he hadn't. So I agree with him that there are unfair rules, but I don't agree that, you know, that's why people want to jump to other tours.
Okay, so Charlie Hoffman was something that I wanted to hit on as far as one of the particular topics, but what about the fans' behavior last week? Your thoughts on just the antics at the WM Phoenix Open? I personally just thought it got out of control.
Well, you know, if you get that many thousands of people drinking alcohol, you know, you're going to get some wild behavior for sure. And, you know, and then the hole-in-one really set them off. they went crazy. Beer bottles flying everywhere, beer cans. But, you know, you start doing stuff like that, and somebody could get hurt pretty easily and pretty badly. I mean, one of those things could hit one of the players or somebody in the eye and ruin their eyesight in one eye. So, I mean, it's a dangerous thing. You can't be throwing projectiles like that out onto the playing field or golf course. But, yeah, like I say, that many thousands of people, you're going to have some crazy stuff going on. And, yeah, and like we said last week, it's fun once a year to have that circus come to town, you know, and players have a good time with it. But, you know, there has to be some parameters and limitations on what the fans can do.
Good stuff. Genesis Invitational, it is underway, and perhaps this week we will see, for the fourth straight week, a first-time PGA Tour winner. Always appreciate when he drops by. That is Larry Miller, former PGA Pro author. Check out his website, LarryMillerGolf.com. He is simply the best. Larry, you and Connie have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Same to you and everybody else out there. Have fun. Watch some golf.
That, of course, was former PGA Pro and author Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at SportsMap Radio Network. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.